VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and on this festive week, I'm joined by Patty Bartley, Ben Smith, and broadcasting live from an undisclosed location in Rippendon, Mr. Oliver Kay. Today we'll be taking a look at the hugely disrupted fixture list in the Premier League, which basically meant there was only football at the Stadium and Light and Ewood Park. We're going to have our usual quick hits feature, where our panelists will this week give us their views on the Champions League draw, the reported Qatari interest in Manchester United, and even, of course, Paul Konchesky's mum, Carol. And in our debate, we'll be taking a look at the Club World Cup. Is it worthwhile? What can we do to improve it? All right, not many games to choose from for our Premier League review this weekend. So let's get started with Blackburn Rovers and West Ham. Now, the first thing that strikes me, in having read, I think, the incredibly angry match report in one of the Sunday newspapers about this, I have to start out with something. Patty, why was this game even played?
Well, I think you have to look at the referee, and as everybody knows, Mike Dean was in charge of that one, very keen to get the game on, which is a good impulse. I think, no matter what you might think of the result, I think it probably justified itself. I particularly enjoyed the picture of Carlton Cole falling in a snowdrift and challenging Paul Robinson to a snowball fight. that was worth the admission price alone.
Ollie, it seems a bit incongruous in the sense that, I mean, you could see if, you know, you want to avoid fixture congestion and so on, but at some point, it would have been obvious that, you know, sort of six or seven of the fixtures from the weekend were going to be called off anyway. So why put people through this? I mean, did so many people travel up from London that you didn't want to send them home disappointed?
Well, I mean, I would take the opposite view. I would say that there were almost certainly games elsewhere that could have been played and should have been played. And I applaud Blackburn for getting it on, for the referee for getting the game on. I didn't see any reason from what I was watching why the game shouldn't have gone ahead. I heard from someone at Blackburn at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning that they'd had people out with the shovels since 5:30 in the morning. I think that's the way it should be. That's the way it always used to be. And I didn't see that game was a lottery or anything like that. And I didn't hear of people breaking their necks slipping on the car parks outside. So I think Blackburn deserve credit for that.
Mm. Well, I think my point was that it was Blackburn and West Ham that maybe the game shouldn't have been played. But
at any point in the season.
Right now, given the problems these two clubs have, and let's talk a bit about Blackburn. Now, I would like us, and I'm going to get this out of the way now, I would like us not to refer to the owner's line of work in the case of Blackburn, because frankly, you know, it's our animal rights abuses, or alleged animal rights abuses aside, and battery farming and whatever, it's just what they do. So please, let's leave the poultry jokes at a minimum. Otherwise,
are we allowed to talk about the pornography element of the other
teams? I was going to say, otherwise, for every poultry joke, Patty's got to make some kind of sexual depravity joke for the pornographers, or Karen Brady joke, whichever one you prefer.
No problem. I could combine the two, by the way.
Let's leave that. Let's leave that for the time being. But I'm interested in this. You get new owners coming in. They don't sack Allardyce right away. Mm. But they say, you know, we're ambitious. We want a certain type of football. We don't think Allardyce results or not. Allardyce doesn't fit the bill. Let's move on. Well, what's wrong with that? Why is everybody so incensed, Ben?
it's a bewildering decision because of the timing, I think, as much as anything else, and because it's now obvious there is no plan there. There was no plan to bring someone in behind Sam. They had nothing lined up. And that's the worrying things for supporters. Ryan Nelson's come out and made his feelings very clear. The lack of communication between the new owners and those at the club is worrying. I just think it doesn't make any sense. There is no clear plan on how they're going to move forward here. Mm.
All I would say, and Ollie would be able to confirm or deny this, given the history of clubs trying to sack managers on the cheap, is it true that Sam Allardyce has had full compensation for the 2.5 million remaining on the last year of his contract? Is that your understanding, Ollie?
It's only what I've read.
We haven't had one of those angry emails, round robin emails from the LMA. So, you know, maybe the decent thing has been done.
So you're saying Sam Allardyce made £2.5 million a year?
Yes, I mean, that's controversial in itself. I mean, the funny thing is that sack Sam and he suddenly becomes. It's like singers who unfortunately perish and their albums go through the roof. You know, sack Sam and he suddenly becomes the object of our crocodile tears and so on. When he was actually a manager, he got nothing but criticism. I think I agree completely about the tactics of the new ownership, whatever they may do away from football, and I'm sure they're very good at it. But I just feel that sometimes we bring out the violins too readily for managers.
Ollie, I'm still shocked by what Paddy just said, that Sam Allardyce made £2.5 million a year.
It's not a paltry sum, is it?
Here we go. I told you. I warned you. Now somebody's going to make a sex joke.
How about you, Paddy?
Yeah, I'm just kidding. But Ollie, I'm trying to think. Can we count on more than one hand the number of Premier League managers who make more than Sam Allardyce?
Well, at risk of making the past couple of minutes of discussion irrelevant, I really don't think that is the sum of money he earned.
Okay.
I think he went to Newcastle on big money, and when he returned with Blackburn, my understanding was that he was under a lot less money, earning a lot less money. So I think the figure, the 2.5 million that was referred to, may have been the fees, you know, the money outstanding on his contract with all bonuses or something like that.
Ollie, the voice of reason. But Ollie, here's the thing, right? So, you know, Ben just said doesn't seem to be a plan there and so on, and certainly that's the way it's been played on the media. My confusion here, maybe again you can shed some light on this, is these folks at Kintaro. Now, for those who don't know, Kintaro is a Japanese superhero, but it's also a company that buys and sells television rights. They've merged with a player agency, SEM, so now they control players as well. And they've got some kind of advisor role at Blackburn as well. And I spoke to somebody at Blackburn who was not happy with Allardyce leaving and basically said, you know, we're now an extension of a player agency and that's all we are. What's your understanding of the role Kintaro is playing, Ollie? And also, surely these Kintaro guys, you know, they're Swiss, they know their football, they're sort of clever. And even if you believe that, if you don't believe Wenke knows what they're doing, surely you think Kintaro knows. Do you think that they have a plan?
I think they have a plan. I was speaking to someone the other day who suggested that the vision was to go away from the previous model of Blackburn surviving season after season, perhaps scrapping for safety, which I think they've had to do and done very well under Mark Hughes and Sam Allardyce the last 5 or 6 years, even Graham Souness before that. Apparently their vision suddenly is to go to bring in young players that maybe they can sell on at a profit, but they can develop. There was talk of developing things the Arsenal way, which all sounds very, you know, very utopian almost, but then you get Miss, I forget her name, I'm really sorry, but the chairwoman of Wenke's, saying that they considered Diego Maradona to be their next manager, which to me is the most alarming thing of all of this.
It would make a lot more sense if Blackburn, since the Jack Walker revolution, didn't have a jolly good record of producing and bringing on their own players. There's one in the team at the moment. I mean, it's not as if they haven't been trying that. I mean, there's one who's tipped to be an England centre-half over the next 2 or 3 years, Jones.
David Dunn, Damien Duff, exactly.
I mean, they've already got a superb record for youth development, and lots, you know, who didn't quite make it at Premier League, but are still having good careers. So, I mean, I think it reminds me very much of when Ashley took over at Newcastle and came up with the same brilliant idea that none of us had ever thought of before, and brought in these weird characters with titles of development and youth. Vettere, by the way, I heard he'd come back into the game. He was described as a scout for Real Madrid.
He's a chief scout.
If he was the one who found Di Stefano and Puskas, then, you know, heavens, everyone would want him.
What is Blackburn's natural realistic dimension here? Because I'm assuming that if people get into this, remember, Quintero or the Venky, you know, the end game is to have a self-sustaining product in the Premier League. The fact of the matter is that Blackburn, we all know its geographic location. There's a tremendous competition in terms of football clubs.
Yeah.
Blackburn itself is one of the more low-income areas in the country. It's difficult to attract crowds, I think, no matter what kind of football you play. And it's even more difficult, I think, to just have this model where, you know, as Paddy said, like, oh, it'll be easy. We'll just get the best young players and then sell them on as a profit. do we think this makes sense? Or is there a serious risk that this could just become a big showcase for Quintero players?
It seems there's a real detachment from reality in these ideas. You know, we'll spend $5 million in the January transfer window. That'll get us up competing for the top four. I mean, it's not as if Blackburn have tried to just narrowly avoid relegation every season. I'm sure they want more for themselves. But to actually get up and make that next step is a huge investment. I'm not sure if these people realise that.
No.
They spent the $5 million on bribes. Yeah.
The idea of clubs as nurseries is a very, very good one. I'm in favour of it at every level of the game. You know, produce as many players as you can, concentrate on home production, you know, sell. If you do produce good ones, you have the choice to sell or keep. But what we have at Blackburn, it seems to me, is a serious danger. We were told when Carlos Tevez left Manchester United, joined Manchester City, that this was the end of third-party ownership. Well, it may have been of players in the Premier League, but now we have a club under third-party ownership, and that's very dangerous.
I have to say, Quintero don't actually own them.
We have the danger of it. We have the danger, and it is already present in other countries. For example, the origin of Mascherano and Tevez was an example of a company exerting what I would consider undue influence over a football club, and there are many, many other examples abroad. It has now, it seems to me, there's a danger of it arriving in the Premier League, and I think the Scudamore and company should be working on this straight away, because I'm sure Quintero is an absolutely honourable company.
Come on, it's owned by two guys named Philip. It's got to be good. They're both Swiss.
there are, unfortunately, unscrupulous people out of here who would offload on a poor club like Blackburn the players that they couldn't get rid of anywhere else.
I have to ask, given the situation that the club are in, if you were a Blackburn fan, would you swap Venky for Sullivan, Gold and Brady?
It's a very good question. The lesser of two evils. I'm not sure who that is. I'll pass on that one. I've got no idea. I mean, they're both... West Ham's situation is bleak. I mean, beyond the owners, which are, you know, who knows what they want to do with that football club. You know, they're staring up from the bottom of the league. Avram Grant, bottom at Christmas again. 1 point worse off than he was with Portsmouth last season. And it's a worrying time for West Ham fans.
Well, let's move on to happier things and two happier clubs, Sunderland and Bolton. A lot of us, well, mainly me, have talked about how wonderful Owen Coyle is. Steve Bruce hasn't quite gotten as much credit, although Sunderland are also up there. Maybe it has to do with the fact that Steve Bruce has spent a lot more money than Owen Coyle. But these are two northern clubs. These are two English clubs with British managers, and I think a primarily British squad, or maybe it's close to 50-50. Mm-hmm. And they're both playing good football on the ground, successful, professional.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be celebrating these clubs a little bit more rather than going on and on about the same issues?
For me, the most memorable match of the season so far was Chelsea 0, Sunderland 3. Could easily have been Chelsea 0, Sunderland 5 or 6. And it was, for me, I thought it was a joyous, I'm sure Chelsea fans didn't agree, but it was wonderful to see a team come and attack the champions on their own ground and succeed. And I thought it was really, really exciting. And it seemed to me to symbolise the defiant nature of this league. In my opinion, if you take away agents and owners, this has been the most enjoyable season since the Premier League was formed in 1992. Maybe not the best, but certainly the most enjoyable. There's been an absence of fatalism, hoping to get away with less than 3-0 at a big club, and Sunderland have to me epitomised it. Let's not forget as well that they've got a ground that holds 48,000 people, same as Manchester City. And they've aspirations to become a pretty big club themselves. I think they've been absolutely terrific. I've been saying all season that Bolton, I didn't think Megson was a bad manager. I mean, if you look at many of the most important players there, I also don't think the difference in style is as much as people say. With Davis.
The script is very clear here. Megson bad, Coyle good. Yes, what part do I understand? True. He's a ginger Mourinho.
That's true. Yeah, I think Bolton, Bolton's success doesn't surprise me. But it's just been a terrific season all round, and I've only got a problem. If you talk about Sunderland, I do have a problem with this Catamol character.
Let's talk about that. Catamol on Johan Elmander. Yeah. Some people thought that it was really bad. Ollie?
I thought it was a pretty grim challenge. It was it was at least a yellow card, and he'd already been booked, and I was staggered that he wasn't sent off.
Had to go.
It seemed like the referee was thinking, oh God, this guy's suffered enough, he gets enough red cards, or maybe he was thinking, hang on, this guy's inviting a second yellow card so obviously here that he must be part of some Jose Mourinho type conspiracy.
He was already suspended because of the totting up procedure and therefore would miss Old Trafford. For me, that's unprofessional because the first booking was just silly. He tried to, I mean, people said it was unlucky. I mean, he whacked out with his right arm, missed, and then barged the guy over. And people were saying he was unlucky.
Incredible, he escaped a red card.
But they were only 1-0 up, weren't they? So it would seem unlikely.
I mean, I think he's, to be quite honest, he plays brainless. At one time out of two, and I think he's a big weakness to that team.
But when he gets his head right, as he did at Stamford Bridge,
he's got the ability, but I mean, he's never going to be Claude Makélélé, is he?
I want to go back to what is one of my obsessions, so please bear with me. I thought Asamoah Gyan and Darren Bent did not work again as a partnership. Individually, very good. When Welbeck, in the end made the difference from the wing and so on.
Yeah.
Does anybody think that he can make this work? Because I think they're a lot better when they just have one of those dudes up front, and then you got some Mel Blanc or some El Mohammadi on the wing or whatever, and Welbeck, and it just seems much more rational to me. Why is he doing this?
I think it's a case when you've got your top goal scorer and you've got your record signing, and you have to accommodate the pair of them somehow, whether that's for the good of the team or not. It isn't at the moment by the looks of it, but I think they miss that creativity of Mel Blanc or someone, a bit of inventiveness in midfield perhaps, and he's sacrificing that for accommodating these guys. It's a tricky situation.
And do you think John would mind coming off the bench given how cold and horrid it is right now? No, if you just said like, hey, you know what, you're my super sub, you've scored a lot of goals, people will view you as a good signing anyway, and just come off the bench. And
I think those of us who watched John during the World Cup, and I'm sure Ollie were impressed.
Yeah.
Didn't realise how good he was. I mean, he's come into the English League, I think he's been absolutely magnificent. I mean, you will not see better technique from a centre forward than the ball that he pulled down, the first touch, where he pulled down a ball just beyond the far post. He pulls it down, waits, and gets a shot on target. Okay, the goalkeeper saved it. But that was Marco van Basten technique. He really is a fine footballer, Jasper.
In our debate this week, we're going to look at the Club World Cup.
The train is now approaching. Junction at Plaza. board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
World Club Cup, as some of us call it. Now, for those who don't know, Inter Milan are champions of the world! And it's all down to Rafa Benitez. No, of course it isn't, because he only had to win two games to go there to actually win it, and it's mostly down to Jose Mourinho. But more of this later. What I'm always interested in is, I mean, in some countries, like my country, like South America, like Spain, this is legitimately a big deal. In this country, probably because for a long time English clubs, or maybe because long time English clubs, you know, didn't win it back when it was the Intercontinental Cup and it was the head-to-head, it was seen as a tin pot, weird, faraway thing. And of course, the European Cup was seen as a tin pot, and even the World Cup for a long time in this country. But I am wondering is there a way to make this a better competition? In fact, first of all, should we try to make this a better competition at all? Should there be a club equivalent of the World Cup that can somehow synthesize the Champions League, the Libertadores, and so on? Or should FIFA just kind of stay out of club football and, you know, leave that to the various confederations? Ollie?
I think there's certainly a good cause for saying that it should be a more prestigious, wider, more widely recognised tournament than it is. I mean, when Man United won it a couple of years ago, Alex Ferguson was aghast at how little credit they got at the time. So they got very little credit for winning that. When Liverpool went and played in Tokyo in 2005, they got very little recognition and very little reaction when they lost the game. And it just seems that we in England are particularly ignorant of it. But it really isn't the showcase event it should be. First of all, it's absolutely right that all the winners of the various confederations should be there. But I just wonder whether maybe it should be widened. If we're serious about it, maybe it should be widened in terms of maybe the losing finalists, or maybe play it every 2 years and have the two champions from the previous 2 years. But then you go into the dangerous area of, do we really need that tournament, which I think is your initial question. And if we are to have that tournament, I think something else has to give somewhere else. And it's whether it's abbreviating the Champions League or enforcing clubs to play fewer games in their domestic leagues, or taking away some of the international dates. Something has to give if this competition is going to be embellished in any way.
Ollie gave a somewhat political fence-sitting answer, which is the answer I would have given, so I can't fault him for that. Ben, do you have a strong view? Do we need this tournament?
I think the idea of having a club world champion is a great one. I think people know who the best team in the world are right now, but I think to have that the official world champions is a nice idea. Ollie's thought of widening it it would be great in practice, but actually the reality of fitting it into a football calendar that's already jam-packed, where players probably don't get enough time off, is difficult. I'm not sure how we do that.
Well, Paddy?
I don't know what to do with the thing. I'm tempted at the moment, on balance, much as I will it to be successful. I went to one of the early ones in Brazil, and I hoped it would kick on from that. It hasn't done. I mean, there will be hidden benefits in terms of the strengthening of Oceania and African sides, and that is vital for the future of football, I agree. But at the moment, I must admit, I'm leaning towards Gabs' final choice, which is drop it.
Well, if we are going to improve it, if we aren't going to drop it altogether, a few years ago, I think it was the summer of 2001, I believe, or 2003, FIFA had this idea for the second annual, and it would have built upon the one Pat is referring to back in 2000, when you remember United had to skip the FA Cup. And basically it was going to be a competition held every 2 years. They were going to invite the winners from the previous 2 years and so on. And it was, I believe it was 16 teams or something like that. And it was going to be held in Spain in the summer. You can actually go on the internet. You can go on Wiki and see sort of the tournament that never was with the teams who would have been there and so on. And that edition was canceled because of the collapse of ISL. And I my unease with this is, as we said, a lot of football on the calendar. Rather than adding this, and one suggestion could be you could have it. You could have it sort of in odd numbered years when there is no Euro or a World Cup, although we still have an issue with the Copa America and so on. But my unease with this is as simple as the fact that there's so much football to be played already, and I kind of dig the idea that, you know, now we know that TP Mazembe, you know, are probably nowhere near as good as Inter Milan, but I kind of like the fact that for a while, you know, fans in Lumumbashi could cradle that idea and say, like, hey, you know what?
We're meeting them on equal terms, yeah.
We're meeting them on equal terms, yeah. And for, you know, and for that 1 week after they beat, Internacional, they could sit there and say, you know what? We're better than the champions of South America. Stop laughing at us.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a wonderful thing to have. And as Paddy said, we need to spread that around, that feeling to other parts of the world where club football isn't a big deal. I think the scepticism in this country is something that may take time to get over. And I think it probably stems all the way back to 2000 when United had to pull out of the FA Cup and all that stuff. I think that probably still lingers. But I think the pure idea of spreading the game and strengthening club football around the world is a great one. I just wonder whether the reality
if
of
African
it,
players, imagine if African players could were all, just suppose you stopped them from leaving and all African players played in Africa. I mean, you'd have one hell of a champions.
I think that's
champions
the other problem,
league,
isn't
it? Wouldn't you?
The strength of European football. When Europe cherry picks the best of the world talent, and
you say that, but historically, if that was the case, then
no,
European
agree.
Teams would have always beaten South American ones. But that's not been the case.
I agree, but isn't that, in a way, it's South America's chance to these players get their chance to shine on a stage where they can show off their talents and perhaps get that move.
And you know what? This is the most absurdly Eurocentric idea that I've heard. No, honestly, since the World Cup, I remember I was on the radio with Phil Neville, and it was before the. It was before the England-Algeria game, and he was going to talk about how excited the Algerian players were going to be that they could face the Premier League stars, and they probably all grew up watching Premier League football. They're going to be in the shop window for the Premier League. I mean, come on.
But isn't there
please proceed, Mr. Scudamore. Yeah,
but isn't there an argument to say there's more motivation there for these South American teams?
No, there isn't. Their motivation is to be world champions.
But yeah, but that's what I mean. It's a bigger deal to them than it is to European teams, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's just as big a deal.
Do Inter Milan really care as much as the rest?
Yes, they do. They do, because we have a sense of history, because we grew up with the fact that especially in the case of Inter Milan, 1965 and 1966, back when it was two-legged and you had to travel to South America to win it, you know. And I'm sure, I mean, Celtic may never be in it ever again, because they may never win the Champions League ever again because of socio-political reasons. But I guarantee you, and Patty, you can help me up on this, but you talk to old school Celtic fans and they'll tell you about, you know, how historic it was when they flew over to got kicked to lumps in the battles.
I also think, to be fair, to Manchester United, for a year after they won the World Cup, the club World Cup. Stop, the announcer would say, now welcome at Old Trafford, before every league match, would say, now welcome the European, the champions of Europe and the world. So, I mean, yeah, it has a nice resonance about it.
Do you want to hear something that will reflect the sort of parochial attitude that we have to it? Mm-hmm. When Man United won it in 2008, they returned. Obviously victorious, and Sepp Blatter was coming to Old Trafford for a game in I think it was when they played Inter Milan early that February or March of 2009 to present them with the badge of honour of having of being world champions. They went to the Premier League to say, right, we'd like this embroidered onto our kit, and the Premier League said no you can't, because it's not one of our competitions. Yes you could if it was the Champions League, but we don't actually recognise this competition. So that is one of the problems that we're dealing with in England. Ben was talking about the sort of stigma or the ignorance that we have, and I mean, you've got to remember, we didn't enter the first World Cups, we didn't enter the first European Cups until Matt Busby took United in, did he, or until the Scottish teams had started even before that. So I think to be having this debate in England it's probably good that we're having it at least, but I think it is taken more seriously elsewhere. And in fact, United fans actually sing about being world champions, don't they? Sing world champions twice, once more than England. I'm really sounding like a United fan. I wish to disabuse myself of that. But it's interesting because United have won it recently, and which is... Is it the only English team to have won it at all, isn't it? So, and they do wear that as a badge of honour, figuratively, if not literally.
Didn't Liverpool win it?
Liverpool lost they lost 2-0 to Flamengo. That's
Forest,
Independiente.
Nunez.
Nunez.
Sao Paulo.
Yeah. Maybe that's the problem.
Right then, to wrap up our Club World Cup discussion, should we keep the Club World Cup as it is and when it is? Paddy.
Yes.
Ben?
Yes.
Ollie?
No.
Can you elaborate?
It should be expanded, but at the expense of whether it's international dates or whether it's Champions League dates or whether it's the domestic club seasons. Something has to give, whether it's for the World Cup, the European Championship, Copa America. All these competitions are worth having, but... at the moment, we've got too much. We've got too much football. We've got too many demands on the players. Something has to give. And I think if somebody were to look at how the football calendar is and restructure it somehow, that would be fantastic. It's just a shame that the decision would be left to people at FIFA.
Well, there you have it. I'm actually kind of with Ollie on this one, surprisingly. All right, time now for everybody's favorite segment of the show, the quick hits, for those of us who like to be hit quickly. Several media reporting that the Qatari royal family are contemplating a £1.5 billion bid for Manchester United. Paddy, would this be good for United, and would it be good for English football? And can you please answer without using the term picks?
Oh, God, you got me there. Right, okay, it would certainly be good for United. To have, leadership that has money without debts of any kind would be a very, very good thing. Would it be good for English football? No way. I keep saying let's follow Germany and let's have an ownership structure that encourages, well, indigenous ownership, but above all, not monopoly ownership.
Indigenous. That's a bit of a controversial word there. Mm. You know, these guys could just buy a British passport. You do realize that. Ollie, some of us predicted that Gerard Houllier might not have been the ideal choice as Aston Villa manager, and he's certainly having a rocky time. If you were Randy Lerner and could step into the old time machine and travel back to September, would you appoint somebody else, and why?
I would appoint someone else. I didn't really... see the logic behind the Houllier appointment at the time. I think he's an extremely good, intelligent coach, but someone whose time perhaps at the Premier League has come and gone. And I thought that he would have difficulties in picking up where O'Neill left off, and that's been borne out. And with hindsight, Owen Coyle, Roberto Di Matteo, even if you could persuade West Brom to let him go. Or Ian Holloway.
Or even Sean O'Driscoll, which is what I said at the time. The Champions League draw on Friday gave Arsenal the toughest task out of the Premier League teams. They get to take on mighty Barcelona. Ben, please assess their chances in 25 seconds or less.
It's a daunting proposition for any team in Europe. I think Barcelona were absolutely outstanding for the first 20-25 minutes at the Emirates last season. Somehow Arsenal got out of there with a 2-2 draw. I think everyone probably agree that Barcelona are an even better side this season. It's very hard to see how you can beat them.
But Arsenal are a better side too. Have some faith.
I have no faith.
Sir Alex Ferguson has now surpassed Sir Matt Busby as Manchester United's longest-serving manager ever. Paddy, you read a book called Football Bloody Hell, which is all about Sir Alex, which is, and by the way, is available in time for Christmas in all good bookstores.
Bless you, Gav.
Or Kwanzaa or Hanukkah. Well, maybe next year's Hanukkah. Now, please tell us, who had the biggest impact on the club?
Well, I tend to go, both really, but I tend to go for the man who started it all. And Matt Busby was unquestionably the father. Just as, you know, people say who was better, Shankly or Paisley. For me, Shankly by a million miles. Because without Shankly, there would have been no Paisley. It's not quite the same comparison. But I would say that many of the methods of Sir Matt Busby have been used by Sir Alex Ferguson to his great credit and very well. And he's won even more consistently. But who knows what would have happened without Munich. Matt Busby's Manchester United might well have won three Champions Leagues in a row. A lot of people think they were good enough to take over from Real Madrid. So I would say, if you twisted my arm until it nearly broke, Busby.
And of course, in honour of Sir Matt Busby and Sir Alex Ferguson, we suspended the 25-second answer rule.
Thanks.
Alan Sugar, the former Tottenham Hotspur owner turned television star, reckons the FA is so messed up it would take government intervention to save it. Ollie, you're a lefty who wants to nationalise everything. Is he right? And isn't government intervention in national FAs the kind of thing FIFA frowns upon and usually reacts to by suspending the national team?
If you look at what happened in Nigeria after the World Cup, their government wanted to pull them out of international football for 2 years to punish their FA for apparent corruption, which is a far more extreme situation than what our government is proposing, which is another review and another investigation into how football is run. I think it's right for that kind of investigation to be done because it can't be done by the FA at the moment because it's leaderless, and we shall see how it goes, but I have limited faith.
Thank you, Comrade K. Paul Konchesky's mum, Carol, has become something of a cause célèbre, going on Facebook and calling Liverpool fans scouse scum. Ben, is this just an unfortunate case of maternal instinct manifesting itself in the wrong way? And should Liverpool fans really be annoyed by this, or maybe even see the humorous side of being offended by this nobody who happened to give birth to a millionaire footballer?
I think it's unfortunate for Konchesky, but it's probably the least of his problems at the moment. I think had his performances been better on the pitch, had his defending been better, I don't think it would have come to this. And he's been labelled unfairly as Roy Hodgson's man, and you know that isn't the most popular thing to be on Merseyside at the moment. His defending has probably been as poor as his mum's spelling. I think that's probably where his problems lie.
It's not your fault if you're not a very good footballer. I mean, it's, you know, at least you're not a bad person.
No, not a bad footballer either, but as he proved at Fulham. But anyway, Gab, one for you. Real Madrid defeated Sevilla 1-0 last night to stay 2 points behind Barcelona. Did you notice anything that makes you think they'll win the title?
Look, they're 2 points back. They have the head-to-head against Barcelona. They can win that. I think Barcelona will run out of steam to some degree, and they're in the hunt. But what I would get really angry about if I were Jose Mourinho was the fact that they were so easily rattled by Sevilla last night. Sevilla went physical. They went a little bit dirty. They hit a lot of long balls. And, you know, the whole game became a disciplinary mess. There were 10 yellows, 2 red cards. Some players, like Ozil, I thought, were really had a really difficult time. And, you know, you can play defensively, which is what, and on the count, which is what Jose has done in the past, but if you do that, you have to do it while giving the appearance of staying in control, and Real Madrid aren't quite there yet. Probably suspend the 25-second rule on myself there as well.
It's Christmas.
Exactly.
We'll be back next week with another episode of The Game. In the meantime, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your gossip, your analysis, and also our web chats. I do mine on Mondays, Paddy's is on Tuesdays, and of course, Ollie K's eagerly awaited slow typing web chat is on Wednesdays. Also, don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm on there at Marcotti. Ollie's on there at Oliver K. Times. Patty's on there at P. Barkley Times. And of course, Ben Smith is on there too at Ben_Smith_Times. We'll be back next Monday for all the Christmas football action with a very busy festive fixture list, weather permitting, of course. Thank you so much for your time. Have a happy winter holiday, and we'll catch you next week. Till then, bye-bye.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.